All right, you're back on the Arms Room with Glenn.
And John.
And I hope the freaking mic works. Now, I'm going to move it
over here so it can be appropriately located.
All right, hopefully the freaking microphone is working now. I think I figured it out.
That's because you're so smart and wise in the ways of science.
I am wise in the ways of science, indeed. Yeah, people would just see our tests, but they wouldn't see what was happening between the tests. Yeah. So we put the broom back together pretty quickly after what happened between the tests.
Yeah, we're pretty good. Tables and chairs were flying.
All right, so hopefully, I don't know, people are joining and no one's complaining, so I'm guessing that it freaking works.
Awesome.
All right, we're the AR-500 Armor Studio. Thank you to all of our patrons for everything you guys do for us in the show. And thank you for participating.
Yeah.
Please make sure
more
that you
participatory.
Guys check the blog and the show reviews, the extra show coming on. You say participatory?
Mm-hmm.
Big, you do your hair one time all of a sudden. Look at the big brain on John. All right. Get them glasses on. All of a sudden he expands his vocabulary.
Nerd.
All right. So where was I? Yeah. Patrons. Thank you.
Yes.
Awesome patrons. Decals. Toaster is broken.
Sweet.
Coming soon.
Awesome.
They're being designed.
Nice.
Right now, we're going with the original crayon look. I was given two different options.
Yes.
The original kind of crayon colored pencil, whatever it was that was drawn in, versus like a computer rendered version. The original version looked way more
better.
Authentic.
Yeah.
Toaster's broken around it. Decals coming soon, guys. They're just finished being
vectorized. Can't wait to plaster those all over water bottles.
All everywhere.
The and laptops.
Is broken. So, yeah, coming soon. Oh, let's see. I got to get out of all my settings here. So I have all these.
Oh, my God.
Test your microphone settings set up here. I guess you were on that. AR-500 armor. We've been talking for the last, several weeks about the concealment vest.
Yes.
And for those of you guys, to use James's words, to those of you guys watching on the video who think that I appear jacked and juicy, all right, I actually am wearing body armor. All right. You like? All right. Concealment vest from AR-500 armor, the same thing we've been talking about for the last couple weeks. Last couple weeks, we were specifically talking about how it kind of applies, you know, or like how it works, like the armor it was using, how it was made, stuff like that. But today, I wanted to wear it underneath a button-up shirt just to kind of show that like you can actually wear something like this out in the public. Now, if I just started walking around and people were really looking at me, they would be able to tell that there was something on underneath my shirt.
But they wouldn't necessarily know because I've seen guys that have that same appearance that are wearing a back brace.
Could be that.
You know.
Also, winter months coming up with a jacket.
Throw a coat on over
yeah.
it. Rainy weather, anything like that. So actually, I carry some body armor. I keep one of the, what do they call them here? The micro rigs, or do they call
the
them
Freeman?
Here? Well, now it's the Freeman, but it used to be
the micro rig.
Micro rig or whatever it was. I carry one of those in my truck, and I also always have like a basic windbreaker. It's a zip-up windbreaker. Just as a light jacket, to throw on. I just keep that always in my truck. So it's like I've thrown that armor on, and it has a rifle mag, a pistol mag, and then a blade on it. And with that windbreaker over, that thing disappears. And it's rifle grade.
Yeah.
You know, so this is pistol grade. I don't think you'd want to wear rifle grade in here, though. It would fix this 10x12. But the purpose here is to conceal for whatever reason that you might need it. So also, we forgot, because in the first show where nothing was working, we introduced our very special guest over here, Ryan's small miniature replica.
Tiny humans
in the studio with us today. And James, first time with us last week, getting to know the boards now, and going to be taking over as show producer for Ryan as his schedule's changing. He's not going to be able to be with us on Mondays anymore. So, James, if you guys have any complaints about the quality of the show, that's james@jackandjuicy.com. If you really like the show, however, you can just email us info@trainingaz.com and tell us what a good job we're doing.
Yeah.
All right. So there you go. All right. What else we got going on? Oh, the cost of these vests is, where are we at?
Couple hundred?
Yeah, $250 with the Rheinlig and $390 with the hybrid. Rheinlig, a little bit bigger, a little bit heavier, not quite as quote unquote capable as the hybrid. However, we have abused Rheinlig in our classes, shooting the hell out of it, and not had any problems with it. And with the hybrid, it's just that much better.
Yep.
And a little bit lighter weight. So there you go. That's your prices. Very cost effective, easy thing to carry around with you. Put on underneath a jacket, a shirt, whatever. Throw it on over the top of something if you want to, just to have some quick soft armor without a bunch of pals and all that junk on it. So there you go.
Boom.
I will slowly undress. All right.
Oh.
Slowly.
I will. People have been doing this with their eyes while I for do a this. Long time.
All right. So everybody can kind of see like this, you know, what it looks like, the armor, like any
But it's
body.
Too small.
Yeah, we always laugh whenever people are like, oh, armor's so small, it does just cover your vital organs.
Weird. It's yeah. like, I don't know, it's crazy.
It's like it's That's supposed to do that.
Kind of what
something.
We're looking for. But I'll shoot you in the dick. I've seen you at the range. You're not going to barely not. Shoot me, much less. But I stand still and I shoot it at static targets on static ranges. I'm a goddamn war hero. And it's like, whatever, man. Fight anytime. I mean, I'm there. I wish duels were still a thing. I would probably be dead by now because I would duel way too many people. I'd be like Alexander Hamilton. I'd be dueling people freaking left and right.
Trial by combat.
Sooner or later, someone's going to get me. But holy shit, the cleansing that I would have brought upon this earth.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Trial by combat should still
be. I feel like, I feel like you'd be more like Billy the Kid. It's like, I'll make you famous.
Make you famous. You'd be another guy I kill. Be famous.
Why are you looking at me? I wouldn't duel you.
I wouldn't duel you. I wouldn't duel anyone on our team because the chance is too high of making a mistake. I would duel Josh.
I no.
In a kissing contest.
I'd fight him. I'd fight everybody on our team with like no weapons allowed at all. I'd fight all of them just because I think it would be fun because that's how I judge
well,
my friends.
Well, a lot of us have fought, you know.
Yeah, it's like how I judge my friends. I look at people and I'm like, I'm not sure I could kick your ass.
But it'd be fun.
We could be friends, right? But if I look at you and I'm like, I'm fairly certain I'll crush
I
your soul.
I can beat you down.
There's
a really great book written by Jack Donovan called The Way of Men. And I'm rereading it now for like the third time. It was provided to me as a loaner. And I apologize to Chris if you're listening. I still have your book, all right? I will give it back to you.
Tacos
it's
and
such
triggers?
A damn good book that I keep rereading it. And I'm going back and keep rereading certain sections. But it's called The Way of Men by Jack Donovan, who's kind of not famous, so to speak, but well-known for an online article he wrote called Violence is Golden, where he kind of got shit on a little bit because people were really upset with the idea that he said violence was a good thing, but it is a good thing, and people being violent with each other is part of the reason, or not being violent with each other anymore. Like John was saying, we want to fight, you know? I mean, John and I have freaking wrestled, I don't even know how many times since we've known each other. The majority of our instructors, at some point in time, I freaking tangled with every single one of them because I don't know what they're capable of.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, and it's standard practice when we travel together.
It is, oftentimes, yeah. It is. We fight a lot in hotel rooms, like a lot. But it's for us, it's not – that's not an angry fighting, right? That's not a combative fighting. It's a manly fighting, right? It's like I'm testing my skills against you. I'm not going to deploy all weapons. You're not going to deploy all weapons. All we're going to do here is kind of test each other's ability. And at the end, if you were difficult and I was difficult –
we're both
nobody
super
really
tired.
Needs to win. Yeah. I mean, you know, that's not necessarily what we're after. But this idea in this book, The Way of Men, is just about how things like that are starting to go away, you know, and we're just not fighting. And that's why I love to wrestle with my sons. You know what I mean? I want to throw them around. I want to dominate too. Like, that's an important thing is not to be like, oh, you win. No, you don't fucking win. You want to know why? Because if you want to win, you got to get strong. And I'm huge compared to you. Now, in the real world, I'm not a very big guy. But to my kids, I'm freaking huge.
Oh, yeah. I
crushed both of my get to win.
I crushed both of my boys last night.
It's like, dude, you got to fight.
At the same time, it was awesome.
You want to get into this world and you want to succeed, you're going to fight for it.
Yep.
And I'm going to teach you how to fight.
Yep.
And you're going to learn how to fight. You're going to learn how to lose with some grace and dignity and how to learn from those mistakes. And then I'm going to teach you how to overcome those things so that you can win. But you're not going to be the kid on a sports team on the sideline crying because you missed the ball. That's not ever going to be my kid.
Nope.
Because my kids they're going to know, and they do know, how to lose with some grace and dignity. You know, so it's like, it gets me fired up.
All right.
Other things to get me fired up. Let's talk about that. So let's see. Covered all that. Adaptive Shoot. I still want to mention this again because I just think it's such a cool freaking program. So if you guys know anybody who has any kind of disability, physical, and maybe even a mental disability, I'm not sure exactly who it's for, you should contact this organization. It's adaptiveshoot.com. One word. They're holding a indoor defensive pistol match for shooters with disabilities on November 2nd at the Sig Sauer Academy. That's a month away in New Hampshire. There's a four-hour... Oh, I didn't even read this before. Holy shit, dude. So remember how we were saying how insane this is? It's $50 for the match fee, plus that includes lunch and dinner. Here's something I skipped over last time. There's also a four-hour training block available free of charge at the Sig Academy the day before from 1 to 5 p.m. So you show up, pay $50, get 4 hours of training from Sig Academy, and then shoot in a pistol match the following day and get fed lunch and dinner. I want to go to this thing. John, break my ankle. All right, I want to get to this thing for $50.
No. You already can't be on time for things. Oh my God. If I break your ankle, it's just going to be worse. I'm never
going to be on time for anything ever, yeah. By the way, the show is late today for three reasons. All right, I want to mention what these three reasons
are. So I actually posted that we were having technical difficulties because I foresaw what was happening.
One, technical difficulties, but that's actually reason number three.
Yeah. Right?
Reason number one.
Everyone goes to work at the same time on the same road.
Well, that's not even that. The 101 does suck, but it actually after 9, if I leave my house after 9, I get to use the HOV lane.
Yeah.
So it's really not too bad.
Right.
But it is a lot of traffic when you leave around that time. And I left like it, I don't remember what time it was. But it sucks.
Yeah.
I also was distracted this morning by distracting things. That's reason number one. Reason number two, I had shitty traffic. Reason number three, technical difficulties getting set up, and then the microphone didn't freaking work. So,
yep,
whatever. Sorry, guys, we were a little late. That's how it goes sometimes.
Meh.
All right, there was a thing that happened at Fort Polk that actually one of our friends was involved in. Not involved in, let me say, affected by. One dead, three injured following a Fort Polk area helicopter crash.
Oh.
Over at the JRTC, a freaking Blackhawk crashed. And a crew member died, and three others were injured. Attached to the 15 Aviation Battalion, a Fort Polk-based unit, flying a medevac mission. They were with the 1st Battalion, 5th Aviation Regiment. A lot of other stuff going on there. Lots of, well, they said it was sad. I don't give a shit what politicians say. So anyways, you know, again, guys, it happens, man.
Yeah.
You know, training accidents are a real thing. People really do die in them. Yes, we're still at war. We talk about that almost every show and someone that we lost, unfortunately, overseas. But people are still dying. It's like any other job. You know what I mean? Like, there's people who die in manufacturing accidents every day.
Yeah.
But then when someone dies in the military, oftentimes people are like, oh, my gosh, like, what happened? And you're like, job. I mean, like, there's a number of things that could have happened. From shoddy equipment to shoddy people to shitty circumstances to just damn bad luck and bad combination of events.
Yep.
You know
all
what I mean?
Of those things coming together to go, well, not today, kids.
I know a guy who survived four very tough deployments and literally got killed in Germany when he got run over by a forklift.
Jesus. It's not funny, but...
On base. Like, all the shit he survived. He goes out getting run over by a forklift.
Yeah.
I mean, like...
One of my wife... My but is it
because then he's just back at his job?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's doing whatever. He's not paying attention. The driver's not paying attention. We're talking about a big... Not like a little warehouse forklift. We're talking about one of those big four-wheeled, like, skylift type things.
Yeah.
It's like... It sucks, man, but it's like my, that's... My it's NTC, a job.
My people NTC rotation hurt. This past summer. They
dying a rollover.
Rolled an Abrams tank off a cliff.
Holy shit.
Bro, hold my beard.
Watch this.
So
I told you this tank couldn't jump that hill.
So one is the acceptable number of loss at NTC. It happens every rotation. One soldier
is
either dead or severely injured every rotation. And we're talking these rotations are monthly.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's 12 dudes a year either dying or getting fucked up.
Yeah.
That's an acceptable loss. My previous rotation, we had a dummy ground guide himself between two Connex boxes. One of them was on a forklift. The other one was on the ground. He ground guided the one on the forklift into himself and pinched himself between the two.
James and I are both wanting to know the same question I know. Was this a National Guardsman?
No.
It's all right. Day one privates are the most special creatures on the planet.
They're peculiar, yeah, aren't they?
They're very interesting.
Why would you do that? Yeah. What in your survival wired brain said this was a good idea?
Complacency. I wasn't paying attention, Sarge.
Wasn't paying attention, Big Sarge.
Yeah, you lost a leg, yeah, bro.
Exactly.
Well, now you're dead. Don't worry. He'll get 100% disability. He'll be fine. All right. I don't know of any other news that happened.
I don't either.
Any other news? You guys think of anything crazy?
I don't even
watch
the crap.
Dude, anymore, I'm so, like, there's so much stupid crap going on politically. You got that little girl that has weird facial expressions. Am I the only one that's weirded out by her facial expressions?
She's such an angry person. She's autistic.
I don't give a shit. She still has weird fucking facial
expressions. I understand that, but it's...
And she's been used by, like, everyone. Like, yeah. Every major organization, as your Antifa has used her.
Everybody.
Like, a whole bunch of freaking crazy far-left people. She's all these photos with her, all these people. I'm like, dude... So there's actually a thing called... I'm going to look it up real quick, because I actually sent it to my oldest son this morning, because we've been having a funny conversation about that. Pedofrasty. It's an argument involving children to prop up a rationalization and make the opponent look like an asshole. This is the funny Urban Dictionary definition. As people are defenseless and suspend all skepticism in front of suffering children. Nobody has the heart to question the authenticity or source of the reporting, often done with the aid of pictures.
Yeah.
Please don't bring... So the example of the word usage... Can you use that word in a sentence, please? Please don't bring in kids to incite empathy. That's pedofrasty. Talk facts. And that's basically all the shit that's happening with these kids. They did it with that weird David Hoag kid. They do it after every big event. Here's the thing. Anymore, kids don't have the same effect on me that they used to. And here's why. Because there's so many shitty parents out there that they're just raising their kids to be shitty people.
You're right.
And I'm like, you're just a shitty, you're like a pre-adult shitty person. But like in a couple of years when you're adult, you're just going to be a shitty person.
Yeah.
And you're just going to be a complainer and a whiner and a have no freaking solutions to your problems type person. And you'll be wandering around the earth like so many people these days. Like, I have all these problems and no solutions. Someone help me. And it's like, I'm tired of this.
Dude, this ties directly back into the conversation. For those of you that listen that follow my Instagram, the Red Bark Gear Instagram, go back and watch my live this morning because I do a live every Monday morning. 20 or 30 minutes. And I was talking about how our society has become too comfortable. And it goes back to the fighting thing to this crap. We're all too comfortable. Nothing's hard for us. I can pick up my phone. I can get on my internet. I can go to the grocery store and buy all of the food and or food flavored product that I want.
Yeah.
I'm not worried about my next meal. There's no fucking saber-toothed tiger's going to eat me this morning.
Unfortunately.
If I want to go to the mountains today, what do? I get in my truck and I drive my ass to the mountains. If I get hungry along the way, I stop at a store and I buy some food. We're too comfortable. Period. Across the board. Everybody. We're too comfortable. And it's making us weak.
Yeah, and then the problem with kids like that is they want to grow up and blame everybody else for their problems instead of just taking responsibility for them because their parents didn't teach them how.
They've been taught. Again, it's like...
Because they never got their ass beat as a kid.
Fact.
Here's the thing. It's like actual raising your kids to accept personal responsibility. They do something wrong. Here's the consequence.
Yeah.
I'm sorry if you're crying, but that doesn't have an effect on me. Like, I'm a dad. I love my children to literally no end. I have amazing kids. They're incredible. They're awesome. They're tons of fun to be around. I love being around them. I'm the kind of guy that never thought I wanted to be a dad. I never figured I ever did want to be a dad. Then I became a dad, and I'm like, holy shit, this is cool. And as I got older and more mature, and my kids got older and more mature, it just became better and better and better, right? And so I'm to the point where it's like, I love my kids tremendously. But them crying has no effect on me when I'm disciplining them. When I am trying to teach them how to be better people. I'm not like, oh God, I need to ease up. And what's interesting to me, and like here's part of the issue, here's part of the disconnect. People will commend me and say, oh, your kids are so great. They're so well behaved. Oh, they're so driven. Oh, they're so competitive and they're so good at their sports, but also so empathetic and compassionate to other people. Wow, your kid is so amazing. Like my oldest son, Garrett, I could brag on him for a long time. He's a freaking incredible kid. All my kids are incredible, but he's really coming into his own now that he's, you know, older. He's
getting closer to that adult age.
Getting to that. Yeah. I mean, he's only a couple years away now. And it's like, he's an amazing young man. He does incredible things. I mean, I watch him Friday night? I can't remember. This weekend. I watch him. He's in honors choir. And I watch him sing what he always sings whenever he has an opportunity to do a solo, some Frank Sinatra. The kid nails it. He's unbelievable. And then the next day I'm watching him practice, you know, for varsity baseball. Like, he's got this wide spectrum of cool stuff. And then last week he's got this thing he does with his church he goes to where I can't remember, every other week or once a month or whatever it is, he goes and hangs out with handicapped and special needs kids and plays with them and teaches them stuff and everything. I get all these like reports back where they're like, your son is freaking incredible, right? I mean, he's such an amazing kid. How the fuck do you think he got that way? Was it a lack of personal responsibility? Was it me not disciplining him?
No.
Was it me not standing out in the rain while he does fucking push-ups because he was back-talking his mom or whatever? Is it that? Nope. That was the freaking ticket, man. It was him being disciplined. It was him not getting everything he ever wanted. What's that Bruce Lee quote? If you want to give your kids what you never had, teach them what you didn't know.
Yeah. I've easy. Never heard that one.
It's easy for me to just go, nice. Here, I'm going to buy you all the cool shit. And I will admit that I am a little guilty of spoiling my kids a little. But I require them to use those things appropriately. And I'm totally okay with taking stuff away from them, too. I'm like, you're not using that properly? That's back to mine now. This is mine. Until you're 18, everything I give you is mine in the end.
Yeah.
All right? Now, I don't flex that too much, but if I need to, I'll flex it. Because, like, you need to understand where all this is coming from. It's my hard work. No, I'm not around as much as you wish I was, as much as I wish I was. Well, that's because that's how you have all these things you have. That's how you go to all these camps. Mm-hmm. That's how you go to all these cool events. That's how you go on all these adventures with your friends and other family and yada yada. Like, this is the hard shit, and you're going to freaking learn about it. And then you got this fucking moron, Greta Thunberg. I don't care how old she is. She's a fucking moron. And all the people behind her are fucking morons. And I'm like, done with this idea of society where everyone's going to put this kid. And then exploitation, here, one of our listeners just, Annette, exploitation would be another way to look at it. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm done listening to these people. I'm like, you're not my tribe. You're not my countrymen. You're not my tribe. You're not my people. You are my enemy. That's who they are. We got to be honest and real about it. Can't we all just get along? No.
No. No, we can't.
We can't all get along. Does that mean I can't get along with everyone who doesn't disagree with me? Of course not. I have amazingly good conversations with all kinds of people who don't agree with me. There's a lot of things. Ryan and I have had some amazingly cool conversations. For any of you guys not listening to the $10 and above shows, you're missing out on some great debates with Ryan and I on homosexuality, religion, belief systems, personal lives, all kinds of stuff. I mean, Ryan is an awesome guy. Comes from similar background, similar ideas and mindset as I do, but has some very different ideas about life that I do. And Ryan and I can be perfectly good friends for the rest of our lives and not agree about everything, and I'm okay with that. But these people, they're not those people. They're not the people I can get along with. They don't even fundamentally. It's like asking me to get along. In fact, I would probably have more in common with a cartel drug runner than I would have with these guys on the other side. I would probably have more in common with an Afghani Al-Qaeda member than I would with these people on the other side. I would definitely have more in common with an ISIS member than I'm going to have in common with these people. Totally different religious beliefs, totally different personal understanding, totally different ideas on how to raise kids and deal with women and all that kind of stuff. But I still bet fundamentally I could sit down, we wouldn't kill each other, I could probably sit down and have a beer with one of those guys better than I could with some fucking Chuck Schumer piece of shit.
You're right.
Because at least these other people, foundationally,
they hold something.
There's something that we believe in together.
Yeah. They hold something greater than themselves, regardless of what it is.
Here's another good example from Brent Grove, who was on our show before. Parents want to be their kid's best friend. Yeah, it's not parenting.
No.
Like he said, it's not parenting. And it's not.
I love it. Both of my boys are like, Dad, I hate you. And I'm like, well, this isn't perfect. The first time you've hated me, and it won't be the last.
It will not be the last
time. Then I'm doing my job, right?
Here's some, we did some good comments from some of our listeners.
Like, I still love you, but that's okay.
Our job as parents is to make our children need us less every day. I like that.
I'm working on that right now with my oldest son, and it's terrible. It's so hard because, you know, I've been kind of lazy with some of those things.
But
well, like, so here's an example too. So here's a message. My daughters are 17 and 19. The last couple of years, they've been very anti-mom because I don't spend my time partying with them and paying for pedicures like their friends' parents are. It's not my job to drink alcohol with my underage kids. Unfortunately, I see that a lot with my peers. I had an experience this weekend that was kind of an interesting parent experience that I'll talk about for a second, and we'll move on past this because I don't want this to be the whole show. But what we're going to talk about today, it does have a lot to do with personal responsibility. But one of my daughters wants to take a trip, a very far away trip, with some of her friends and their parents. And she's just like, I want to go. All right, well, let's like lay some things out to me. Tell me about your plans. Where are you going to stay? Where are you going to go? This place you're going to, you've never been to before. It's very far away. It's the kind of thing where you're going to have to cross some borders. We need to know more about this kind of stuff. Like, give me some plans. So she gets the itinerary. She brings it back. It's like, that's not my job. This is your trip. You bring me the information. So she brings me the information. I want to be your friend. Like, oh, of course you should go. It'll be totally fun. It's going to be tons of fun. I want her to go on the trip, but that's like what I'm going to let her know up front.
Yeah.
I'm going to say, no, we need to be skeptical about this. And bring me the itinerary. Bring me a plan. Show me who these people are. I've never even met this friend or her parents.
Mm.
You know? Now, her mom has met the friend and the parents like one time, and that's it. And I'm like, that's not enough for me. Mm-mm. So then finally, I'm like, all right, I call the parents. I'm like, I'm coming to your house. And I'm going to sit down and talk with you guys. That turns out they're fucking really cool people.
Yeah.
And that was great, right? But like, I go there, take Drew and I go. We go sit down with them. We chat with them. They're really, really turn out to be cool people. He and I have some great things in common, know some common people. You know, sit down, relax, of course, puts my mind at ease. But then, of course, I double check the information she gave me against the information he gives me. All turns out, everything looks good, cool. Now, today, I'll talk to her and say, all right, cool. Like, here's all the things I've done. Here's the process I went through. And now we're going to preview to go on this trip. But I'm not your friend. That's not why I'm allowing you to go on this trip. I'm your parent. I know you're going to be safe and secure. I know your plans. I know what you're going to be able to do. I know contact information. I have more phone numbers now than I had before. Like, but it's really easy if we were just friends, right? If James came to me as a friend and said, hey, man, I'm thinking about going on this trip. What do you think? I'll be like, yeah, you should go.
Go for it.
It sounds awesome.
Do it.
You know what I mean? I'm not going to check any of the information I checked with my daughter because we're friends. He's a grown adult. Go do your shit.
You got it.
But she's my daughter. She's my responsibility specifically, and she's still a kid. I don't want to be her friend. Being a friend is a byproduct, in my opinion, of being a good parent. Mm-hmm. I look back at who I am now and the good, close friends I am with my parents, especially my father. And when I was my oldest son's age, my father and I were anything but friends.
You're right.
You know what I mean? We were not friends. My dad loved me, but he's a hard motherfucker, you know, and rightfully so. And he was hard on us, and I'm glad he was hard on us, you know. So anyway, we've got any other comments on here? The heck with that noise as an occasion, sure, but only a few times a year. Oh, drinking with your kids, okay. Oh, and drinking when we get, I get it, okay. All right, cool. Anything else to say on that topic, guys, before we roll on?
No.
That's it. Redwire gear moment, go.
So, mark your training and your carry magazines, right? So number system, letters, whatever, right? That way when you're out on the range and you're training, you're taking a class and you start noticing that there's a problem, you can go, okay, well, maybe it's this magazine. So then you can eliminate that specific magazine. You're like, okay, this is number 5, which you wrote down in your training journal because you keep a training journal. Like, okay, number 5, I keep getting double feeds, right? So you mark that, put number 5 away, and then you can move on to a different mag. Well, if the problem keeps happening with that mag, well, now you've realized that maybe it's not a magazine problem, maybe it's a weapons problem, right? As opposed to just, oh, I don't know if it's this mag or that mag. So mark your mags, and then that way you can also keep your training magazines and your carry magazines separate because they're two separate things, right? I don't train with my carry magazines, and I don't carry my training magazines. So that's that. Final.
Stop. All right, we don't know what happened there, but whatever. We're back. Facebook screwed us. Sometimes every now and then we'll be doing a live.
We got shadow banned, but not. But not in the shadows.
Sometimes we'll be doing a live video and it'll just turn off.
Perfect.
Everything just turns off. Whatever. I don't know. Whatever it is.
Awesome.
I don't give a shit.
Yeah, it's great.
All right. So we're gonna move on. Redwire Gear Moment, brought to you by RedwireGear.com.
Yeah.
Finish it up with saying, make sure you guys Mark your magazines. Training magazines versus carry magazines.
Yep.
All right, we're going to move on to our topic for the day. Finish out the last half of the show with this. Firearm safety violation stories and some of the crazy stuff that we've seen. So the first thing I want to say about this is, you know, we had Dave on here last week talking about all the crazy stuff that happens in emergency rooms. And one of those things was how often people accidentally shoot themselves. And he was saying it's like once a week.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's always the same thing. Like, I thought it was unloaded and, you know, it just went off and all that. So here's the problem I see. All right. Now, I heard years ago, in fact, I was one of the first quote unquote civilian training classes that I ever took. I heard this said by the instructor. He said, there are those people who have had negligent discharges. Mm-hmm. And then there are those people that are waiting to have negligent discharges, right? And his idea was basically like, if you're around guns enough,
yeah,
you're going to at some point do something stupid. And I'm going to tell my own two memorable ND stories and a couple others, just like you guys will, I'm sure. But here's what I want to talk about first and why I think this happens. And we had Chris on here from Caliber Development Group, I don't know, maybe a couple months ago, and he's a good friend of ours, and he was talking about, we were kind of talking about like the seriousness of guns, mm-hmm. social media, gun bunnies, we were kind of ranting about that, and the seriousness of guns has been taken away. And that's, to me, that's a big part of it. Like, I carry a gun every single day of my life.
Yeah.
I have, as an adult, had a gun on or near me my entire adult life, literally my entire adult life. I have carried them professionally. Mm-hmm. I have carried them recreationally. Mm-hmm. I've carried them defensively. I've had guns around me all the time. Growing up, I had guns around me all the time. We had guns way more easily accessible than we probably should have, especially by today's standards, because we shot a lot of critters in the backyard and stuff like that, right? So like, all that said, there was always a seriousness that was attached to that firearm. Mm-hmm. These pieces of equipment are a tool, but they kill easier than a saw or a hammer might. So the seriousness that my dad put on to me was very real. And I kept that seriousness with me throughout my entire life. Like, I've never looked at my guns as toys. No. I've never looked at them as like just a fun thing. I have fun with them. I also enjoy building stuff with hammers and nails. So I look at those as a fun tool as well. But this tool is a very powerful tool and it's got a lot of responsibility that comes with it. So it's a very serious thing. Part of the reason I think we're seeing more and more stupid violations of safety rules is twofold. The first part is we just have more video of idiots doing idiotic things.
Oh, yeah. The same stupid things have always happened.
Oh.
It's just they weren't – you couldn't record it and post it to shame your buddies.
James just recently got to see the Tex Grebner video where that guy goes to holster his pistol into that freaking
circle. Oh, God. I shot myself.
Just shot myself. And then it's like – and, dude, James and I were like – James was like, what would you do if you shot yourself? Like, I'm like – delete. That's what I would do. Delete that video. Are you shitting me? Right? That's like the last thing I would want on the freaking internet. And that is like a viral famous video.
Oh, yeah.
But the point is like we just have more video and more capability of idiots doing idiotic things. Blew my leg off, right? Like, God. Like that famous freaking video. I mean, like there's so many videos of people just doing stupid stuff. The other part of the issues that I see is the lack of seriousness that I mostly blame on social media, the lack of seriousness attached to firearms. That firearms are this thing that you pull out and you take pictures of. Take a picture of me with this gun. Hey, girl, take a picture with this gun. Put your boobs out a little bit. Hey, guy, dress up in fucking multicam and take a picture with this gun. Let me take a picture of this on my bedroom floor. Look, I've done all kinds of firearm photos. So I'm not saying don't do it.
Yeah.
But the seriousness that you attach to it is important. I heard this weekend, last night actually, I heard about one of the gayest things that I think I've ever heard about that people are doing with firearm pictures. I didn't know this was even a thing until I was told about it last night.
You have my attention.
Adult males, yes. I will not call them men.
Okay.
Adult males, mostly betas, I'm guessing.
Okay.
When they get a new suppressor, unzip their pants and put it in the unzipped thing as if it were their dick. Take a photo of that and then post it. I can't even.
What? I don't even know what to say to that.
I can't even. I didn't know that was a thing. That's like got to be a weird thing on Pornhub. Like you're like searching like, I like to watch midgets tied up and screwed with strap-on horse implements or something. Like I can't. And then that pops up and you're like, what? And even that guy would be like, what the fuck is this? You know what I mean? Like, are you kidding me? That you, the seriousness is removed in that sense. It's like, dude, I get that not everybody considers their firearms as like defensive tools or offensive tools. I get that a very small portion of people in our country will ever, ever, ever have to point a gun at another human being in self-defense, offense, anger, or anything. I get that. I understand it. I appreciate it. I'm grateful for it. I don't want the most of the people I know to have to go through that kind of shit. That's not what I'm after. But have some freaking respect for the thing that you're dealing with. And so to me, like, the lack of seriousness that kind of stuff is why we have idiots who do that kind of stuff are dangerous. They're not dangerous like dangerous men. They're fucking stupid dangerous.
Yes.
They're dangerous because they're stupid. And they're going to go out and do stupid stuff. These are the guys who accidentally shoot their kids. These are the guys who accidentally shoot their girlfriends or wives, accidentally shoot their buddies, put a hole in the side of their truck. Because to them, this is just a toy. And they're buying as many toys as they can, mm-hmm. like Lego sets. They want as many as they can. And then they want to take photos of them, but they don't actually go out and apply them. They're not actually out there really learning how to use these things safely and efficiently and effectively. It's those kinds of people who do that kind of crap and all the other stupid crap associated with it. Now, if you want to go out and be funny with your guns, I got no problem with that. We have an associate who runs an Instagram page called Tactically Tactical Tactics. All right. If you're not looking at it, you freaking need to be because he's freaking hilarious. All right. He's here in Arizona. That's about all the information I'll give because he doesn't give me personal information. I sure as hell don't want to blow him out of the water. But
what was that again?
Tactically Tactical Tactics. All right. He's got a really hilarious page. He posts all kinds of funny videos.
2.0?
Yes. And some other videos that are like educational. You know, he's an instructor to an extent. So like he posts some educational videos. He posts some entertaining videos. He does funny things with guns, right? I'm okay with people making entertainment. I love watching that Hickok 45 guy. That dude just loves shooting. I don't even care what he's testing. I don't care about gun tests. Guns work. I got it. I don't care about the gun test. I don't need you to put it in a block of ice. I need you to throw it in a pond. I don't give a shit about any of that. I like to actually watch Hickok 45 shoot guns. I just like to watch him shoot a gun. If you've not watched his videos, he's this old dude down the south. He's got this beautiful range like in his backyard. And he just explodes things with guns ridiculously and hilariously.
Yeah.
And he gives like legitimate tests of the gun. But I don't even care about those. I just like watching this dude shoot guns because he gets so much enjoyment out of it. He'll shoot the gun and be like, oh boy, howdy, that was a good time. And you're like, yes.
Well, it's like watching but Jerry Mitchell safe.
Yeah, Jerry Mitchell, the same thing. Which, by the way, Jerry Mitchell is not a human being. For anyone who doesn't know, he's a robot alien.
Yeah.
All right? Peel that man's flesh back and prove to me that he's a human being. That's all I want to see. All right? Yeah. So, Jerry Mitchell is the same way. He's like out there.
That fucking 1-5. Oh, dude. Didn't he do a 1-5 with a 107?
With a Barrett.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is a 1-5 drill.
And he's like, woo! He's like,
woo! That was fast.
And I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, that is awesome.
Dude, I'd be laying down fucking unconscious if I did that.
Oh, God. Like, that's part of the reason I love going to competitions. Like, I go to competitions. I do very well at some competitions. I do decent at other competitions. Yeah. I never do horrible. You know, I'm a good shooter, so I can always accomplish some level of performance. But I go to competitions not for anything that I just mentioned. I go to competitions because I generally, or I genuinely, I mean, enjoy shooting at competitions. It's tons of fun. I get to go there with my friends. I get to watch them shoot. We have fun little competitions. I get to watch them have a good stage. I get to watch them have a bad stage. I get to see how they handle both, which tells you a lot about someone's character. I get to just have a good time shooting. And at the end of the stage, if I mess something up, I just laugh it off and we go to the next stage. Yep. I genuinely love to go to competitions because I just enjoy shooting. That's the fun part of shooting for me. Everything else I do in my life with guns is hard work and training.
Yeah.
So I genuinely like to go freaking shoot guns. And it's like, there's nothing wrong with having fun with guns.
No.
Just be
safe,
respectful, and safe.
Yeah.
That's it. So Ryan, since Ryan had to step out with his little lady, I'm going to share his first story here. He says, here's one of my stories. A private was conducting magazine changes in his tent overseas. During one of the magazine changes, he grabbed a magazine with live ammunition. No shocker there. Well, with no surprise, he loaded and chambered a round. Shortly after, he discharged a round going through his tent into a tent across the road, sticking into an 82nd Airborne guy. So I shot him in the ass. 82nd guy ends up being fine. If people knew how many NDs happen in bases, FOBs, FTXs, holy crap.
Dude, it's retarded. It's retarded. That's actually one of my stories. I watched a dude like dump half a fucking drum out of a 240 in a clearing area going back into the FOB.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Why does it keep firing?
Right? Yeah, I'm like, thankfully I was sitting safely in my truck, and I mean it was in, because they have these big areas with the HESCOs, and you drive your truck up and you clear before you drive onto post with a loaded fucking machine gun mounted to the top of your truck, right? Mm-hmm. I can't, the first one really stuck in my mind. All of the other ones I'm just like, fucking grunts. Right? It happened regularly.
It does. Regularly.
Like, how many lieutenants have murdered clearing barrels? How many privates have murdered clearing barrels?
My father used to tell a story, and still tells a story, of course, about any story he's told once, he's told it many times.
Oh, yeah.
So I am a replica of my dad in that regard. So my father told me the story many times when I was a kid about they were leaving Vietnam. So everyone has survived.
Right.
We're leaving Vietnam. He's like, we're literally sitting in essentially what is an airport terminal getting ready to board and go. And he's like, there's this officer who comes in, and the MPs are like, sir, you need to clear your weapon, you know? So he's like, he takes his pistol out, he racks the freaking slide and goes, boom, and shoots it in the clearing barrel. And everyone's like, oh! And then he looks at the pistol like, the hell? Racks the slide again, ejects another spent round, boom, into the freaking clearing chamber. Racks it a third time, and there was some, my dad said, some freaking Green Beret dude who was standing there. He's like, reaches out and grabs the freaking weapon, yanks it out of the dude's hand, rips the magazine out, racks the slide, clears it in the chamber, the barrel, puts it back in the officer's holster, and is like, you have to remove the magazine first, sir. You know? I remember that story because I was always like, I mean, are they really that stupid, Dad? You know? Mm. And he was just like, just wait, boy. You'll get your time.
Yeah.
You know? And then,
true.
And then,
you'll see.
And yeah, I saw plenty of people in
super
uniform.
Super true.
Have stupid mistakes. Now, I think how you handle those kinds of things is a big deal. I mean, we'll tell a couple more stories here, but I was on one of the first carbine classes I ever took as a regular guy. Big line, taught by a cop, mostly cops in the class.
Right.
Handful of dirty civilians, right? And I didn't really like the instructor particularly well with his instructor perspectives, because he was kind of just doing a bunch of cop shit that I didn't really care about. But the way he handled an ND in class was really good, I felt. And I wasn't instructing yet, but as I became an instructor, I kind of use this as an example. Because we've seen NDs in class, for sure. It happens. Always safe. No problem so far.
Nope.
But this guy is, we're doing an exercise. It's like day two of a 3-day class. Everyone's starting to get tired. We're toward the end of day two. Everyone's getting tired. And we're doing these basically gun up drills. And this guy's trying to press the trigger and it won't happen. And we're doing simulated malfunction clearances. So he's like tapping and racking and then nothing's happening with the trigger, blah, blah, blah. And so he's looking at his gun like this, like kind of examining it. and he's got his finger on the freaking trigger. Now, he's pointed downrange, all right, but he's got his finger on the trigger like, what the hell? And then he realizes his safety is on. So with his finger depressing the trigger, he chunk, depress, and everyone else is slung and done. The line is cold. And boom, this guy freaking has an ND, and he stops. And he's a local cop, and he stops. And he takes his finger off the trigger, and he looks left at me, and he looks right at the other guy, and we're just like shrugging our shoulders like, yeah, it was stupid, man. You're right.
Way to go, dummy.
And that instructor just comes barreling over. I'm like, oh my gosh, he's going to freaking chew this dude's ass. And he gets right close to him, really so that no one else could really hear him that well. But I was standing close enough to hear him. And he was just like, explain to me what just happened. And the guy was like, I thought I was having a malfunction. I'm a little overloaded with this exercise. I'm a little tired. I was depressing the trigger, and I engaged the...
I disengaged
the safety, and I fired around. And he was like, where did it go? And he was like, it went in the back berm. And the instructor looked at me and said, did you see what happened? I said, yeah. He said, is that what happened? I said, yes, it is. And I said, the round did impact the back berm. And they looked at the guy at the right, and he's like, do you agree? And he's like, yeah. And he was like, don't ever let that happen again. And he has left. And I was like, oh, my gosh. I mean, I was recently from an environment where we would have been like,
you'd have been what
the fuck just happened? And like 8 freaking knife hands would have come out. You'd have just been descended upon by senior NCOs.
Street shark attack.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Total shark attack, you know?
Burpees until you vomit.
And so that was a really unique way I saw an ND being handled. And as an instructor who's had several NDs happen in class over the years, it's going to happen. People make mistakes. I cannot control them. That's basically how I've handled nearly all of them with the exception of 1, 2.
Yeah.
Other than that, it's always been like, okay, let's put the gun away safely, relax, take a breath, put it away, explain to me what just happened. Can you articulate what just happened? And if they can, great. all right, so here's a story from a listener. Had just put some new trigger parts in my G17 and dry firing all morning. Then I loaded it. Came back into my room later, picked it up, and without a thought, put a Winchester Ranger 147 grain through my bedroom exterior wall, right into the cinder block wall, the other side of which my neighbor was crouched working on a shed. He popped up when I went outside and asked if I heard that sound. I told him I dropped a giant ladder in the garage. While I picked up my heart from the floor, I've kept the casing and perfectly mushroomed bullet in my watch box as a reminder to not be a dumbass.
Hey, that's a good one.
Dude... I had a friend who had recently separated from the military and was cleaning his Glock on the kitchen counter, standing up, cleaned it, loaded it, left to get something to drink or whatever in the kitchen, came back, like what happened here, picked it up, dry fired it, boom, put a bullet through the wall. Now the bullet goes through the wall and into his bedroom. It goes into his closet and it shoots through all of his girlfriend's clothes and embeds itself on the other side of the wall. So he's like, oh my gosh, right? He's home alone. He runs in the bedroom to see what happened. He's like, oh my gosh, looks like moths have been in here. You know what I mean? There's like a bullet hole.
This.
Some of this isn't going to be taken care of. He's like, I can patch the wall. What am I going to do with these clothes? And he called me up and he's like, what am I going to do? What am I going to tell her? What am I going to tell her? And I go, I'm honest with you, dude, I'll tell her the truth. Like, you don't, this is not the kind of thing with this kind of, she's already kind of a little weird about the gun. You definitely don't want to lie to her. Like, tell her exactly what happened. Tell her why it happened. Explain to her how it happened, how it's not going to happen again, how, you know, you've learned about this experience, blah, blah, blah. So he did, and he calls me back the next day. I'm like, well, how'd it go? And he's like, well, she was a little upset at first that I'd fired a gun in the house. Like, but when I explained, it's not really that much damage to the house. It'd been caused. She was fine. I said, I took her in the bedroom, and I showed her what happened in the closet. And she just turned around to me and said, I will be shopping for new clothes this weekend. You will say nothing about it. And he was like, got
right.
it.
Yeah, smart man.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Got it. And she did. She went down and bought a whole bunch of new clothes. And
here's the plastic. Have fun.
There it is.
Don't yell at me.
Let's try to be somewhat reasonable.
I'll tell you about my first ND. I was about, let's see, it was my first elk. So I was like 11 years old. I was shooting a Remington 700 BDL in 25-06. At the time, unbeknownst to us, because this is pre-internet, social media, all that kind of stuff, you know, nowadays things like recalls get passed around like crazy. And if guns getting recalled, pretty much everyone in the gun community knows it. Back then, if they didn't post it up on the wall at the freaking local gun store, you didn't know though. And if you didn't read it, you didn't know there was a recall. Well, this particular gun had had a recall. I didn't find that out until years later with the internet. I was literally just randomly cruising some site, and they were talking about old recalls to guns and stuff like that. I'm like, oh, this seems like an interesting
topic. Were a couple of big cases revolved around that.
There were. This particular gun and this particular recall. Yeah, the Ren 700
BDL. Yeah.
And so that was what this whole thread in this – it was on AR15.com is where this whole thread was around. So I'm reading it, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, like that's exactly what happened to me. So my dad, you know, we always were on – we rode a lot of quads, and we were responsible about it. We never went off-road or anything like that. But we rode a lot of quads, easier to get there than with the truck. And, of course, I was a little kid, so, you know, I'm riding on the back seat of one. And we kept our rifles in the rifle racks up on front. And so we were out elk hunting. We're coming back to camp, and my dad got out and was opening up the gate. And he said, hey, why don't you, you know, drive through the gate? And then he was stopping and messing with something, and I said, can I – clear my rifle because we're almost back to camp. And my dad's like, yeah, that's smart. We're far away from camp. Go ahead and clear it here. So I pull the rifle out of the gun, the little scabbard thing. I put it on my leg, pointing straight up in the air, and flip the safety off. There was a round in the chamber. I flip the safety off. Boom! It freaking fires. So I wait. I stop. You're like, oh, God. My dad turns around. He's like, you just fire your rifle? And I was just like, it was a total accident. I swear, like, my finger was nowhere near the trigger. I just disengaged the safety. So my dad's like, all right, we'll see if we can get it to do it again. So he loads another round in. We shake it. We rattle it. We rode around on the quad for a while, point it in a safe direction. Could not get it to repeat. And so my dad's like, look, I've never seen you do anything stupid before, so I'm going to trust you on this. But let's just say your finger was on the trigger. Let's not do that again. All right? You got to really make sure your finger's not on the trigger. It's a safe direction. You know, he handled it well. He didn't bitch me out or anything like that. And then years later, I read that was a problem, which would happen with the trigger bar or whatever would ride hard against the safety. And if it jolted enough, it would release and basically hop up on top of the safety
mm-hmm.
just because it was a little bit of extra space in there or whatever. So when you disengage the safety bar would drop and the freaking firing pin would slam forward. So turns out it was a mechanical failure. And honestly, my first ND being a mechanical failure was an interesting experience to me because I've never experienced a mechanical failure like that since. It was only that time.
Yep.
And it definitely scared the hell out of me.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was me a deep shit too, you know. My dad's a pretty chill guy. I mean, he's a hard dude, but he's pretty chill when it comes to teaching people stuff. And it was a good lesson. But My second ND was not it was a mechanical failure on my part. I just got into shooting competitions and I was shooting some basic pistol stuff and then some really basic three gun. And I was running really basic setups like an M4, Remington 870 pump, and a Beretta 92. I was very familiar with the M9. I like the M9. I'm one of like the few people who actually likes the M9.
Oh, I love it. I think it's a great gun.
And so I had a 92 FS, which is basically an M9. And most people know, if you've run one, of course, that it's got the decocker / decocker. All right?
Yes.
It's a fucking decocker.
It's a decocker. It's not a safety.
But it's treated like a safety in the military, right? So you're supposed to decock it and leave it in position. So people call it decocker / safety, but it's not. It's a decocker. The way that you would effectively use the gun is to decock it and then put the lever back into the up position because your very first trigger pull is going to be double action,
yep.
Which is already tough enough. But because the military is who they are, they want a round in the chamber, but hammer up, decocker down, safety, quote-unquote safety on. So I'm familiar with that concept, and I'm not really paying attention. So I know this weapon decently, you know, I've put some hands on it a little. I mean, literally, just a little, but I'm familiar enough with it. So I am standing at the line. I've finished the stage and I'm standing at the line clearing guns. And the stage was done. I was the last shooter of the whole damn day. And so everyone's kind of like milling around, kind of not really paying attention. And a buddy of mine walked up and was like, hey man, it was one of my very first pistol competitions. Hey man, how do you think you did? And blah, 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 blah. So we're kind of talking and I was messing with my gun in the downrange area. So I was pointing at the safe berm and everything, but I was kind of messing with it like, you know, figuring this out. And I cocked it and the hammer was back. And I, instead of using the decocker, single hand, like thumb decocked it, you know, like the old cowboys.
Whammo!
I'm talking, my thumb slips off the hammer more than 60% away. Boom! Freaking fires around into the berm. And I was like, holy shit. You know what I mean? And so everyone kind of turns and looks, and my buddy's like, it's good, we're just testing something. And I'm like, oh my God, dude, did you see what freaking happened?
I just
like,
pooped myself.
He was like, yeah, dude, you just had a freaking negligence discharge. And I was like, holy shit, I'm never doing that again. Like, decockers for life, you know? And that was an important learning experience. I mean, yeah, I was many years ago, but that was an important experience for me, you know, to remember, like, no matter who you think you are or what your skill level is, you got to pay attention to what you're doing when you're handling a firearm. Don't be talking to someone else.
Yep.
Pay attention to what you're doing when you're handling a firearm. Mm-hmm. I'm happy to say that since then, I have not, to my recollection, had an ND.
I've had a couple as an adult, mostly at the range doing – I've actually had a couple during class as a student. I remember one was not long after I first got my Glock. That was – we were working on like flash sight.
Yeah.
And I prepped my trigger a little too much because I wasn't used to it yet.
Yeah.
And I was at about here, and I'm like, wham! I'm like, oh, fuck. And I just kept going, you know. I've had a couple of those happened, you know. As I was adjusting to the Glock, and then I'd gotten a new trigger. Same thing kind of happened not long after that. But I've been very fortunate with that because it's not something that my dad harped on a lot. It's something that the Marine Corps harped on a lot. You know, it was because that's where I learned actually learned the safety of handling firearms was there.
Mm-hmm.
So most of those things have stuck with me, or all of those things have stuck with me. So I've been very fortunate to only have had a couple like that, and they've always been at the range. They've always been weapon in a safe direction. So they've always been like learning opportunities and not life altering opportunities, like we're fond of saying from time to time. So, I've been very lucky. I've seen some amazing stuff. Just, I'm like, I don't understand how you're alive. You know, I don't understand how some people have managed to get as far as they have in life, being what life is, while handling guns. You know, one of my favorite stories, we had a student many years ago that we called the Dangler, snub-nose revolver.
The Dangler, yes, indeed.
Every single time there was an engagement, pew pew pew, whoo, and just swing it.
And this was, you know, another person who's typically right? Like, I've been around guns my whole life.
Yeah, remember, exactly.
My husband's a whatever shooter, and I know what I'm doing.
Thankfully, there were no NDs that time, but I cannot tell you how many times Glenn and I both got the opportunity to look down the barrel of that gun while it was upside down pointing at us.
Yeah. So there's one of our buddies posted a couple stories. I'll read them real quick on Instagram. No shit, there I was on the drill pad after an FTX at the end of basic training, and the soldier leans over his M16 with the muzzle in his tummy to fuck with something. Bang! Thankfully, just a blank, and the BFA was still installed, so it just burned a little hole in the pocket of his field jacket. In 2004, my unit was activated to augment Air Force Security Forces. I was attached to 56 Security Forces at Luke. Bear in mind, these soldiers are Army National Guard. Mostly.
Hey, easy there, guy.
Retards. I didn't say that. He wrote that. He wrote that. Retards. He wrote.
If he's retards, listening.
How do you pronounce the other word? Oh, I'm not going to say that. That's not nice to John. And doing their level best to live up to every stereotype of Army National Guard components. I pull up to the DFAC and see this Joe clambering out of a Security Forces Ford Ranger, all tangled up in a sling trying to unfuck some other gear. While he's doing all this, the rifle is hanging, muzzle down, by the trigger, off his thumb. No round was fired, but I did put my fingers in my ears. We cleared the rifles after drawing them before guard mount and carried them with an empty chamber and magazine inserted.
How the... What? He's holding it with his thumb.
People just get all tangled up in their shit. I've seen that, man. Dude, I have done. I have.
How
done,
do you not notice that? That's. I mean, it's not a.
Dude, I have done.
It doesn't training weigh as much as 10 moving boxes.
10 moving boxes.
But you would notice a.
But what's seven in the boxes?
Doesn't
that's
matter.
Always every. As soon as I heard that, I'm like, whoa, back up.
A box of towels.
Just the boxes.
Maybe.
A box of pillows.
Plates.
Just a box of books.
Fine china?
What's in the box?
But I mean,
what's in the box?
Even though it's regardless, that's the weak part of hand, relatively heavy in comparison. How do you not fucking guard guys?
So, dude, I'll tell you, here was another really important learning experience for me and firearm safety. I was several years ago, well into my years as a firearms instructor.
Is this the Ruger Roger story?
No, I'm not going to tell that story online or on there.
super funny.
Yeah, that would be hard to explain the circumstances surrounding that.
story. Well, you don't have to explain.
But there was a... I was over at, we'll say, a friend's house, okay? Because it is a friend, a very good friend.
Okay.
And this is a friend that, military combat veteran.
Yep.
Hunter.
Yep.
Instructor.
Yep.
Very experienced gun person. Been around guns their whole life. Carries a gun defensively every day. So we're talking about someone who is my peer here, right? And they had recently just, at the time we were kind of geeking out about 1022s. And we were trying to modify our 1022s to be super cool without dumping a ton of money and buying a bunch of old quartz and products and making a $1,000 1022, which is not what our goal at the time. So he had messed with his trigger a little bit. Then he was really proud of his job. And so I was over there hanging out with him. He goes, man, I want to show you my 1022 trigger. So he brings it to me. Now, at this point, I've assumed that he's handing me an unloaded gun. All right? I see him remove the magazine. So I figure he's cleared it. He hands it to me. I'm looking through the optic, and I'm like, wow, I really like the way you did it. But I haven't pressed the trigger, mm-hmm. right? And I'm like, yeah, I really like, he had modified some stuff. I'm like, yeah, I really like the way it handles. He's like, yeah, man. He's like, you got to feel that trigger. And he takes that out of my hand. He's like, it's so sweet. Boom! He freaking fires it, all right? So he'd removed the magazine, hadn't cleared the chamber.
Yeah.
And he often kept it loaded because he used to shoot stuff in his backyard. So I'm like, huh, we freeze. And I'm like, that just happened, you know? And he's like, yeah.
What happened?
I didn't hear anything. Shit. So he shot through his front door. He had those little glass panels, like up top, like a little half moon.
Yeah.
Right through that. So shatters the glass. Goes through his security door. He's got it on the front. Punches right through that. And slams into a tree in his front yard. So pretty good lineup. Tree's pretty big. But I like look a little to the left, a little to the right. I'm like, bro, if you miss that tree, they'll literally put that around your neighbor's house. Like, probably in a non-dangerous place, but like, wow. Let's just put that gun down for a second and appreciate what just happened. Like, two very experienced guys were handling a firearm that wasn't properly cleared.
Mm-mm. By either.
Now, I didn't press the trigger. To my credit, all right, I didn't press the trigger
right.
because I hadn't cleared it. But I wasn't thinking about that. I was checking out something else he had modified.
Right.
And then he was like, yeah, but you got to check out the trigger. And then whammo, he freaking put a bullet through it. So that was another like big learning experience for me. Again, it doesn't matter who the other person is.
Mm-hmm.
You need to treat all firearms like they're loaded, regardless of who the other person that you're dealing with is.
You're right.
And typically what you see is when people break firearm safety rules, if they break one, it's usually a learning experience. It's when they break two or more
yeah.
that it generally becomes a life-altering experience and they shoot the wrong people. And there's 1,000 stories out there that you can read about.
Go to YouTube, man. You can watch a million different videos of people just doing stupid shit. Blowing their legs off. Blowing refrigerator doors at themselves. So, 2 or 3 years.
Shooting each other. Shooting themselves.
2 or 3 years ago. Not necessarily a firearm safety issue, but a guns or toys issue with Tannerite.
Yeah.
That killed a 11-year-old kid with the dryer door?
Stove.
Stove, yeah. Right.
It was here in Arizona.
Yeah. Packs a stove full of Tannerite and shoots it.
Fucking like door a, comes like off. A wood-burning stove. And comes off of there and
smokes a kid.
Oh, my Jesus. Yeah. Oh, my Jesus. And yeah. Freaking just smoke that kid, man.
How many pounds of Tannerite was? Who knows? That'd be a lot.
I don't know.
More than there should have been, yeah, in it.
Exactly. Considering that they were blowing up a stove in the desert too much, because there shouldn't have been any inside of a stove at that standoff distance.
Yeah.
But people don't know. They think it's just a toy.
Yep.
You know? Exactly. And again, that's where it becomes a problem is the lack of respect that people have for things. And because they hee-haw and mess around and they get too comfortable and they take too many photos and they think that the gun builds in them some automatic level of skill or understanding of the gun. I mean, that's like me picking up a set of surgical tools and believing I'm a surgeon just because I can hold the tool correctly.
I stayed in a Holiday Inn Express once.
Yeah. Because I've been stabbed myself with a scalpel, I must be good at being a surgeon. And it's like, no. Just because you haven't shot yourself yet or anyone else yet doesn't even mean that you're safe. So I think that's a big thing, like a big takeaway from this that people really should pay attention to is like, look at your common practices.
Mm-hmm.
Look at how you're handling guns. How are you doing it, specifically in your life? Are you making some of these stupid mistakes? Because I've seen very experienced people do very stupid things.
Yep.
Because they got, like John said, too comfortable. Anything else to add to that, John?
No, don't be dumb with your guns.
Firearm safety rules. 5 firearm safety rules. Treat all firearms like they're loaded. Don't point your muzzle at anything you're not willing to destroy.
Keep your fingers straight off the trigger until you are ready to fire.
Know your target and what is beyond it, around it, and what will happen when you start shooting it.
Mm-hmm.
And have control of your firearm at all times. It's your firearm. It's your responsibility.
It's weird. It's like that list's been around for, I don't know.
If only someone would make a list of simple firearm rules that we could all
They could write them down and post them everywhere. They could be easily found and referenced.
Well, remember that the firearm safety rules apply to the firearm, not the circumstance. We apply firearm safety rules just as much kicking in doors as we do shooting on the range or maintaining them or hunting with them or anything like that. And oftentimes you'll hear people who have some experience refer to them as big boy rules. And what some people think that means is, oh yeah, just kind of do whatever you want. Just don't shoot anybody. No, what big boy rules means is we expect you to be a big boy and follow the rules without us following you around and correcting you on every little thing that you're doing. We just expect that you're going to follow the rules because you're a big boy. So big boy rules doesn't mean be stupid.
Right.
Big boy rules means we expect you to be a big boy and follow the rules.
Right.
And that's a term I hear used in this industry a lot incorrectly.
Yep.
All right, guys. Remember that you can bring us out to train with you if you're interested in our training in your area. Email us info@trainingaz.com. Remember to follow us on Facebook and Instagram as The Arms Room, The Red Wire Gear, and Independence Training. We're proud members of the Heroes Media Group. Make sure you check out the other shows that they have. Make sure you check out AR 500 Armor. They got some cool stuff coming out. Next month, I'm pretty excited. We're going to be having their helmets in here. We're going to be talking about their new helmet setups. I got a 6-month list here of the cool stuff that we're going to be talking about. I'm pretty excited to get some of it in here. So really cool stuff. All right. Next week, we're going to be talking about new medical tools and how to make a good choice with so many different options out there. There are so many options in health. James and I were teaching a medical class yesterday, and we were actually looking at the bandages. I think we ended up counting. I counted like 15 different types of common bandages.
Yeah.
And that's not even including all the uncommon random shit. So a lot of options out there. We're going to go over that next week. What's good, what's not, what to get, what to avoid. Until next time, you guys stay aware, stay safe, and train hard. You've been listening to The Arms Room.